thought, since an eighth Tzora LeYaakov, in the midst of difficult times, which Rashi says that there are two brachas in Shmoneh Esrei that pertain to Geula. There's the brach of Re'enu V'Anyenu, which ends Goal Yisrael, or Goel Yisrael. And then there's the bracha at Tzemach David and Yerushalayim Ircha. And Rashi explains that the first bracha doesn't refer to the final geula. It refers to the difficulties and challenges and times of danger that people go through on an ongoing basis, and that we ask the Ribbono Shel Olam to redeem us from that. So if we're in an eis tzara, umimenu yivashaya, sometimes by knowing how to deal with the tzara itself, that brings the Yeshua. So want to speak about a few ideas from the Sedra that I think can give us an understanding of how to deal with this tzara on an individual basis. First thing is that says that Miriam was named Miriam because the bitterness of the Shibud started when she was born. So this was the worst time of Shibud Mitzrayim. We went through the time that we were strangers in a land that wasn't ours. That included even Eretz Yisrael before we went down to Egypt. Then it included the times of the servitude. And the last time was the Inui. Terrible oppression. That started when Miriam was born. And the whole time of oppression was really only 86 years. And yet, Miriam had a prophecy, and that her mother would give birth to the Redeemer. And when her father divorced his wife, in order not to make any children that would be born prey to Paro's gzeira of drowning the children, Miriam rebuked her father. She was a six-year-old girl. And she rebuked her father and she said, "You're worse than Paro. Paro only decreed on the males. You decreed even on the females. Paro, it's a question whether he'll be successful or not. If you don't have any children, definitely there's not going to be any future to the Jewish people." So, and she said, "I had a prophecy that you're going to be the father of the Redeemer." So he remarried, he listened to his daughter, and he remarried his wife, and all of the Jews followed suit, and they began having children again. And he had a child, Moshe Rabbeinu, and she hid him for 3 months, and after that she couldn't hide him anymore. And the father said to her, "Where's your prophecy?" When he was born, he patted her on the head, and he said, "I see you were right." Right? Because all the signs were that Moshe Rabbeinu was somebody special. They saw the light with him, the light of the Shekhinah. And then when they had to put him in the Nile, he slapped her on the face and he said, "Where's your prophecy?" And Miriam didn't give up. And she stood by and watched to see what was going to happen with her little baby brother. And eventually she was the one who made the shidduch between Basya Basparo and her mother. And they were able to make Moshe Rabbeinu grow up in a Jewish home and be nursed by a Jew and finally given over to Bas Paro. What did we learn from Miriam? That the first thing, even the worst times, you can't give up hope. Even Miriam, whose name represents the bitterness, but she, her mila was she didn't give up hope. She, what's it called? She waited and she rebuked her father to keep trying, not to give up. And even when things looked dismal and her father already gave up, she again didn't give up. There's a medrash that says that in the schus, that Miriam waited for her little brother to see what would happen. The whole Jewish people waited for her in the desert later on. What's the connection? Waiting in the desert could bring the people to give up hope. Right? They waited so many times. There was delay. So many things happened that delayed them from coming to Eretz Yisrael. Every time there's another delay, could make them just give up. But Miriam personified the idea of not giving up, So she couldn't cause them to give up hope because they were delayed because of her. So that's squish. They were able to wait for her, and the Rabbanu Shlomo wasn't afraid that waiting for Miriam would bring them to Yiyush, to giving up hope, because Lamaisa Miriam personified not giving up hope. And that's the idea that when a person doesn't give up hope, that connects him to the Yeshua. The halacha is that if you lose something and you give up hope of finding it, then it's not yours anymore. And if somebody finds it, even if they know it's yours, they can keep it. Because you've severed your connection to it by giving up hope. Right? Your connection to something is that you can use it. It's yours. If you lose it, you lose that connection. What keeps you connected? Your desire to have it back. But if you lose that desire, then there's nothing connecting you to the object anymore, and therefore it's not yours anymore.
Does that include other things as well, not just objects?
Meaning? We're saying it applies over here too. That if there's a salvation that's going to come, giving up hope on it severs you from that salvation.
Okay, like a woman who was childbearing for a long period of time.
Right.
Right? If she gives up, does that mean like it's not hers anymore?
It means it's much harder for that Yeshua to come. The Yeshua will come a lot easier if you don't give up hope.
So this works in all areas with health, with all these things.
What?
Yeah, right.
For sure, we know that medically speaking, patients who give up hope of living usually die much sooner than patients have hope. I was wondering to explain the Gemara. The Gemara says that Mashiach will not come till the Jewish people give up hope from it. Now, that doesn't mean it won't come at all. It means it won't come. Mashiach's not going to come through our doing. We have to give up hope of bringing it ourselves. And part of bringing it ourselves is not giving up hope. So when we give up hope of bringing it ourselves, then it'll come, because then it'll be clear they're coming totally from the Rabbanu Shlomo. But part of bringing it ourselves is just not giving up hope of bringing it ourselves. Yeah.
Not to get too sidetracked, but the Rav was saying that if you give up hope, if someone's not feeling well and you give up hope, there's less chances of him recovering. So how does that interfere with Hashem's decision?
Because a person is judged according to his merit and according to how much miracles he needs to be saved and how much merit he has to have those miracles. The more natural something is, the less merit he needs. The less natural, the more merit. So a person doesn't give up hope, it's more natural that he should be able to survive and recover. And if he gives up hope, then it's not so natural. He needs miracles. Maybe he doesn't have the merit to have those miracles. So his judgment hinges on how much merit he has and how natural the thing can come. And not giving up hope is one of the means of making it more natural and needing less merit. Needing less merit. So that's first lesson. Second lesson. Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, Vayigdal hayeled. The child grew. And then the next pasuk says, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew. So the Ramban explains that the first one was physically. Moshe grew up, a little boy grew up into a young man. The second one is he matured emotionally. He became a mature young person. What made him a godel? What made him a person who was great, was big? Right, in emotionally, maturity-wise, Vayetze al Echo Vayar Besivlosam. He went out to his brothers and he saw their plight, their tzaris. Rashi says, Nosan Eino Velibo Lios Meitzer Alehem. He put his heart, his eyes and his heart to suffer together with them. So that's the second idea. If you want to, and it's interesting that because of this, later on it says, Vayeda Elohim, God saw the suffering of the Jewish people, Vayeda Elohim, and he knew, and Rashi says the same thing. Rashi says, Nosan Einov, where is it? Rashi says, here. Nosan Alehem Lev, he put his heart to them, Velohelim Einov, and he didn't, close his eyes from them. He didn't take away his eyes from them. Okay? Meaning that when there are Jews who care for other Jews, That creates a situation where God cares for us too. Now, what does it mean? Nosan eino v'libo leos mitzraleim. It means that Moshe Rabbeinu actually felt the suffering of his brethren. That is called empathy, as opposed to sympathy, but it's more than empathy. It's called nosei ba'olim chaveiro. It means that you carry the yoke of another person suffering with them. It can happen for simcha too. You share their simcha. You share their tzara. You make it easier for them because they see that you're carrying it with them. And that means that you're a great person, because a small person only cares about himself. A great person realizes that himself is interrelated to all other people. And the more people that you're interrelated with, the bigger a person you are. Because you grow by containing other people within you. Okay, just to make that more clear, Reb Shimon Shkop asks a question. He says that we have a mandate to be concerned, self-concern. It's a Torah mandate. You're supposed to be concerned about yourself. You come first. In all situations, you need tzedakah, you come first. You need a life-death situation, you come first. You have a lost article to run after, and your father or your Rebbe has something, you come first. You always come first. But you can't only be concerned about yourself, you have to be concerned about other people. So how do you balance self-concern with concern for others? So he says it's only a problem if you consider yourself from your toes to your head. Then self-concern is you, and everybody else out there is somebody else. So it's a big conflict. But some people are bigger than that, and they consider their spouse part of them. So when they're concerned about their spouse, they're not concerned about somebody else, they're concerned about themselves. Self-concern. It's just they're concerned about two bodies, because that's them. Some people consider their whole family part of them. So when they're concerned about their family, it's self-concern. Some people consider their extended family, relatives, or friends, community, country, world, then it's all self-concern. Then it's just a matter of priorities. There's a very big difference between when I'm worried about somebody else or I'm worried about myself, and I just have to set the priorities, which part of myself comes first. Okay, this lesson, the Chiddushei Harim says that when Yaakov Avinu wanted to lie down, so the stones fought which stone his head would rest. So what did God do? He fused all the stones together, and then it was no problem anymore. Says the Chiddushei Harim, why not? Yaakov's head didn't get any smaller, bigger, and the rocks didn't get any smaller. So there were one gigantic rock 12 times the size of Yaakov's head. So his head's only going to rest on 1/12 of the stone. Why didn't they still fight? Which part of the stone is he going to rest on? My part or your part? The answer is, once it's all one stone, it doesn't really make a difference. It's all the same. And then it's only a matter of priority, right? Which part of me do I have to give preference to at this point? But it's all part of me. So a great person feels the joy and the sorrow of other people. He's able to empathize with them and carry their load with them. And you need two things. You need eyes and you need a heart. And by Moshe, it says Rashi puts the eyes before the heart. Nosan eino v'libo leos mitzraleim. First you need eyes. You have to understand intellectually what the problem is. And you have to understand intellectually how to solve that problem. Right? Or how to deal with the person to bring him the things that will cause him to either feel better or to solve the problem. So first you need the intellect, the einayim, the eyes, to see. But once you see it, then you have to feel it. Then you need the heart. It's not enough just to, from afar, recognize the need, understand what the solution would be. But you have to feel it too. You have to do something about it too, to feel it. By God, it's the opposite. The Ribbono Shel Olam knows everything. The question is, right, first of all, he has to feel what the people are feeling, because he has to put his mercy on them. He has to set his mercy in action, because maybe the people don't deserve the mercy. So first God puts his heart to it. And then he doesn't blind his eyes to it, because now that he has mercy, he'll do something about it. But if the situation was one where they don't deserve mercy, they deserve judgment or whatever, then God is going to, what's it called, close his eyes from finding a solution, because the solution is not for their better interest, better they should be punished. But once God opens his feelings of mercy, then he won't hide his eyes from them and he'll find a solution for them. So by God, it works the opposite. Because God always knows what the situation is. But he has to open his mercy or close his mercy, and then he will access that solution or not. Masha'in Cain, by human beings, first you have to know the situation before you can feel for it. First you have to know it. You can't feel for something if you don't understand what it is. First you have to know it intellectually, then you can feel it. Okay. After that, we are introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu championing the Jewish man who was being beaten, and saving him and killing the Egyptian. Okay, and here we understand that when there are tzaras and people are suffering, it's not enough just to know and to feel and not to give up hope, but you have to take action, and you have to save if you can, whatever you can do, to make sure that the people who are being oppressed are saved, are something's done to save them and to punish the evildoers. So it's not enough just to know and try to find solutions and let the find what's it called, the way to work within the tzara, but if you have the ability to stop the tzara by punishing the wicked, the evildoers, and doing something to them, do something. So that's the next thing. And the idea being that Yiddishkeit is not just a religion where you can stand on the sidelines and cheer. You have to get involved. So it wasn't enough for Moshe Rabbeinu to know and to feel, he had to do it. And that's what he did. And he was willing to put his life in danger and kill that Egyptian who was threatening the life of a Jew. And with that, I always like to say, that's what the Medrash means, when the Medrash says, "Kol ha-mazkir es ha-tzadik ve'eino mevorcho," person who mentions a tzaddik, it doesn't give him a bracha, is over with the essay of Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. In other words, if you like tzaddikim, you're mentioning them, then give them a bracha, do something. Don't just admire the situation, get involved, do something. If you mention a rasha, curse him. You mention a tzaddik, give him a bracha. I want to say that's what the Gemara means. The Gemara says, okay, the Gemara says that kol hanehena misudas chasan, person who enjoys the meal of a chasan, the eino mesamcha, doesn't make him happy, he transgresses five kolos, five sounds, voices, kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kala, kol omer hodu l'Hashem. So I said the idea is the following. Person goes to a wedding and he enjoys the meal. In other words, not just he enjoys eating, he enjoys the idea of marriage. It's a great thing. Then fine. Then do something positive to strengthen this marriage as you're starting. Make the chasan and kala happy, because that sets the foundation for happiness for the rest of their life. Don't enjoy the idea and stand on the sidelines and say it's a great idea, I'm all for it. Do something to strengthen it. Do something, get involved. That's the idea. So a person has to not give up hope. He has to feel the tzara as it's happening. Empathize with others, understand intellectually what the tzara is, what they're going through, what the solution could be, and then do something about it, and do things that are drastic, okay? And then to make peace between Jews themselves. Right? It's not enough just to save the people who are suffering from the outside, but you have to find the reason why they're suffering. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he heard that Dasan Aviram wanted to snitch on him to Paro, that he understood that this is the problem of the Jewish people, that we have no achdus, we're not united. And therefore, he stopped Jews hitting each other too, because the tzara doesn't come from what happens from the outside. It happens because there's a blemish on the inside. And if Jews can't get along together and Jews are hitting each other, then we're vulnerable to the to Goyim, right, who are not going to get along with us and are going to attack us from the outside. So it's the Achdus, it's the unity that that's important. I was thinking just now as I'm saying it, that, you know, there was a tremendous amount of unity that was created by the murders in Mumbai. And that could have been a necessary prelude to the war that we're going through now. Now, the Rav Amshon always brings the refuah before the makkah. So it could be that achdus that lasted for a while, at least, was the refuah before this makkah. Now, one of the ways of defending the Jewish people and making us less vulnerable is to have this this achdus. Okay? And then, if you are upset about evil, it can't just be evil that affects you. You have to be upset about the whole world. We find the Rabbeinu Yonah says that Hevi Mispal B'Shlomo Shel Malchus, Mishnah Pirkei Avos, daven for the welfare of the government. Shil Mole Morah Ishes Re'eu Chayim Below. If it wouldn't be for the fear of the government, there'd be anarchy and people would swallow each other up alive. So Rabbeinu Yonah says it's not only talking about a government that rules over Jews and Goyim, and if the government falls and there's anarchy, Jews will suffer. It's talking about a government where there's no Jews. It's talking about Goyim off who knows where in Biafra, right? It's talking about Hutus and Tutsis. No connection to Jews at all. But I should daven that there should be peace and these people shouldn't suffer, because a tzaddik is concerned for the welfare of all people. So it's not enough just to be concerned about the suffering of Klal Yisrael, of your brethren. It's not enough just to do something about it. It's not enough just to get involved in seeing to it that Jews act properly. But where there are goyim hurting other goyim, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu saved the daughters of Yisro from the shepherds. And it wasn't something earth-shaking. It wasn't a matter of pikuach nefesh. They weren't going to kill them. They just were chasing them away to take some water. Still Moshe got involved. Because if you want tzaras to go away, if you want evil to be vanquished, then you have to get involved even when the evil doesn't affect you directly, even when it affects other people. Because in that way, if you push away evil in the world, then evil gets pushed away from you too. So all of these things are what's it called, are positive things to do in trying to counteract a difficult time that besets a person, or surely besets Klal Yisrael. There's one more point though. All these things, okay, can be in place and can exist. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he goes back to Egypt to redeem the Jewish people, after all these things are put into motion, he didn't give up hope, right? There's no, hope hasn't been given up, right? And he, what's it called, Moshe Rabbeinu is sensitive to the needs of the Jewish people, and he, what's it called, is willing to get involved and save Jews from evildoers. And he's willing to get involved and see to it that Jews don't do evil to each other. And he's willing to get involved and take away evil, even when it applies only to other people, even when it's not so intense. All that, and now the redemption's going to come. Moshe Rabbeinu is on the way back to Egypt, and he's not so careful to make sure that he circumcises his son. He pushes it off a little bit, improperly. And because of that, the Rabbeinu Shlom sends a malach to kill him. That means they can have all the right things, but if you don't keep the Torah properly, the Geula may not come. So the whole purpose of the Geula is Kabbalah Satorah. The Zelichos, Moshe said, who am I that I should redeem the Jewish people, and who are they that they're fit? God said their fitness to be redeemed is the fact that they're going to receive the Torah and observe it. So if you don't observe the Torah, then all these things are meaningless. So you can have all these things, and if there's a slight blemish, right, a slight aberration in Shmiras HaTorah, even by Moshe Rabbeinu, then the whole Geula is not going to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu could be killed. So in addition to all these things, a person has to be very careful that he keeps the Torah properly, right? Because that in itself is the purpose of Geula, all Geulas, that we should be able, what's the purpose of Mashiach? That we should be able to observe the Torah to the highest degree and learn Torah to the highest degree. That's what the Rambam says. So all Geulas till then have the same purpose. So if we're not going to keep the Torah properly, what do you need the Geula for? So with all these positive points, you still need that, keep the Torah properly. So in a nutshell, I think those are some of the points in the Sedra. It's a Sedra of Golas and the beginnings of Geula. We're going through also another stage of Golas, another stage of suffering of the Jewish people, and these are some of the points, I think, that if each person initiates them himself, right, in his own small way, then those are things that will promote our being redeemed from these short-term tzaras and ultimately bring the long-term geula b'mheirah v'yameinu. Any questions?
Would yes. Enjoy the goyim fighting.
What?
It
depends who's fighting. When there's two Rishoyim fighting each other, let them kill each other. Right? The other Rabbah, let them do the dirty work. But Moshe Rabbeinu saved these innocent daughters of Yisroel from shepherds who wanted to do evil to them. They didn't deserve to be hurt, right? So when you have Goyim fighting, and there are evildoers against people who are pretty much innocent, there you have to get involved. But if both of them are, right, if the Hamas and the Fatah are fighting, let them kill each other. Right? Nobody should get involved. They should stand on the sides and root both of them to win. But if there's somebody who's innocent, and they're being manipulated and harassed by evildoers, then a Jew has to be concerned about that too.
We are concerned about that.
What?
We are concerned because every day there's a period of time where they allow human sharing.
Right, which no other no other country in the world ever did or was expected to do. Right, all the recent Kosovo, all the recent things. And that was unheard of. They never let such a thing happen. They call it, all of a sudden, let them, you know, ceasefire, let the Hamas rearm or whatever, strengthen themselves, run away a little bit more, so we can give humanitarian aid to the people who put them into power. It's absurd. But okay, but the world expects from us more, which is a Kiddush Hashem, and we have to act differently also. So...
But if Goyim needs your help, and also Jews need
your
help...
Jews have to take priority. Just like if your family needs help, and a stranger, another Jew, needs help, your family comes first. The closer someone is to you, the bigger the priority. Jews are direct relatives. Goyim are secondary relatives. You can help a Goy, but first you help Jews. Because Goyim will help other Goyim too. They're closer to them.
Okay.